I've discovered a wonderful food that I was aware of. I've had a few of them in my life here and there, but I didn't know that they actually were very edible. And I'm talking about pickles. Yeah, pickles. Pickles are tasty. And I looked at the label on the back of the pickle jar, and there are virtually no calories in a pickle whatsoever. Just it's like you eat the pickle and your body says, I didn't eat anything. It's just, it's an amazing thing. Basically no calories at all. The only thing a pickle really does have in it in any quantity is sodium. About 300 milligrams of sodium in about 3 pickles, which is not horrible. They're crunchy. They're tasty. They have vinegar in the ingredient, in the pickling process. Vinegar is excellent for your body. It cleans out your system, man. Vinegar is a good thing. You can clean floors with it. So I started eating some pickles yesterday. I had like 1, 2, maybe 3, perhaps 4. Might have had 5, perhaps 6. Maybe 7, certainly, well, yeah, 8. I couldn't say I had 9, I did. 10, I don't know where it stopped. I ate a lot of pickles because they were tasty, and you just eat the little damn things, and in the back of my mind, there's no calories, there's no calories, there's no calories. Then I ran into a female person, and we were talking, and she said to me, "You smell like pickles." I said, "Well, it's because I had pickles today. Is it a bad thing?" "Yeah, you smell like a giant pickle." So much for that pickle idea.
Ron Van Dam is an experienced talk show host. Do not attempt to try this at home.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
I don't want to smell like pickles.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
It's just not worth it to walk around smelling like a pickle.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Pickle Show.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
I wonder if somewhere in England there's a guy with a big mustache and an ascot around his neck. Say, "Hey, would you care for a little tea and pickles?" I don't know, maybe there is. Maybe that's big over there, I have no idea. I'm done with the pickle thing, by the way. I'm done with the pickles. There's a restaurant in Whitman, Massachusetts. It's an Irish pub kind of place. Very nice place. And their big deal on the appetizer menu is the fried pickles. And a lot of restaurants, I guess, have the fried pickles. And the first time that I saw that, I laughed. I laughed out loud. And people turned around and said, "What's so funny, you tall, lanky little piece of crap?" And I said, "Well, fried pickles, are they serious? I've never seen someone make a joke on a menu. It's a cute idea to make people laugh at the absurdity of a certain menu selection, but it made me laugh and it engaged me in the menu." They said, no, that's fried pickles. You never heard of fried pickles? That's very, very funny. Nobody fries a pickle. What are you, sick? Are you absurd? How could you possibly, why would anybody eat a pickle that's been fried? You've got to be kidding me. I said, no, it's very tasty. So no, it can't be. Stop it. Stop it. You're all ganging up on me making a big joke. Where's the camera? There's no such thing as a fried pickle. It's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. No, Ryan, they deep fry pickles and then you eat them. What? You deep fry pickles? Why? Why would you want to do that? It's very, very good, actually. No, it can't be good. You don't understand. It defies gravity. You can't say that pickles that are fried are tasty. Although, in our American society, everything that's deep fried is acceptable. You could have deep fried socks and people probably eat them. So I guess it's possible. But to brag about it, hey, they got the best deep fried pickles. What? What? Anyway. Hi, how are you? Good to be with you today. Sit back. I'm done with the pickle thing. I'm really done. You can see my frustration. I opened the show by talking about just how healthy and delicious pickles are, ice cold out of the jar. And then these restaurants come along and they offer an appetizer of hot fried pickles. Nothing's going right for me. Nothing. Speaking of restaurants, I have a dilemma for you. Let's play a game. Do you want to play a game? Let's play a game. Well, I'll tell you a funny story, actually. No, I'm not going to tell you a funny story. We're going to play a game. I'm a little confused, ladies and gentlemen, quite obviously. All right, here we go. Let's play a game. It's a game of danger. I have a friend named David. Now, we're not really close friends. I don't think I've ever touched him. I guess I shook his hand once, which I guess is touching, right? We're very good acquaintances. He's a magician. He's been on my television show a number of times. As a matter of fact, almost more than other guests. Nice guy. And he on Facebook, he posts this story and a picture. And nothing to me is strange anymore on Facebook, because everything on Facebook is freaking ridiculous. So you can't shock anybody with a picture on Facebook anymore. Everybody would probably say, well, that's not strange enough. What are you doing it for? In the picture on Facebook, it looks like a piece of looks like a piece of vomit. And it's this milky yellow congealed thing in the palm of his hand. And I looked at it first and I thought, why would you do this? Why would you post a picture of some kind of congealed horrible thing in the palm of your hand? And I go on to read it. Apparently he was sitting in a restaurant, a local restaurant that he goes to all the time. He loves the food there. I'm not going to mention the name of the restaurant. And he was eating some food. And I think it was an omelet or something. And he's biting the food and he's chewing the food. And all of a sudden something sharp and hard hits his teeth in his mouth. And he spits it out into the palm of his hand. And that's when the picture was taken. And in the picture, you can see a sloppy, disgusting, slimy piece of plastic. It looks like a chipped piece of plastic. And in the story, he says, well, I could have swallowed this. I could have died. I mean, it was a giant piece of plastic. He could have, you know? Apparently, he gets up. He calls a waitress over. It was a girl, so I can say waitress. And she says, oh, my God. Oh, my God. And she goes into the kitchen, and she conjures up the owner, the manager. And they're trying to figure out where this piece of plastic came from that got in his food in the kitchen, obviously. And they find at the end of a shelf that was like higher up off the ground, there was a chip on the end of the shelf. Apparently, a piece of plastic from the end of the shelf fell into this pan. I would have fired the chef personally and said, how can you let this happen? Someone could have died out there. You must be conscious of what things are falling into your pan. A little bit of spit, some snot, I can understand. But a piece of plastic from a shelf above, that is inexcusable. Pack your stuff and get out of my restaurant. But that didn't happen. Instead, they apologized profusely. And my acquaintance friend David said, that's okay. That can happen anywhere. And he walks out of the restaurant, and he's been back there since. And he poses the question, what would you do under those circumstances? Well, obviously David is a hero. I mean, he didn't create the stink that I think most of us would create. And I started to think, what would have happened if I was eating food in a restaurant, pick up a forkful of food, put it in my mouth, trusting that it's going to be tasty and wonderful, and all of a sudden I bite down on a hard, sharp piece of something, spit it into my hand, I think I would have already had my lawyers there. Bob, yeah, we got another one here. Yeah, another piece of plastic. Come on down, let's sue the sucker. I mean, I don't know. But I would have been pissed, man. I could have swallowed that. And I know most of the people that I know would have been pissed as well. But for some reason, my friend David was just very angelic about it and extremely understanding. Of course, the piece of plastic didn't fall into his food on purpose. But yet, it's the restaurant's responsibility. And I'm sure, and the restaurant did apologize profusely. They said, I can't believe this. I'm so sorry. And he said, oh, you know, these things happen. Yeah, I don't think I would have been that nice about it. I might have lifted the chair that I was sitting in and hit the chef. I don't think I would have been that violent. I would have tapped him in the head, perhaps, with the chair. Or perhaps I would have taken a plastic container and shoved it down his throat so that he could understand what I had just gone through. I could have gone to the Board of Health and said, oh my God, these people have chipped plastic shelves and they nearly killed me. I could have called an attorney to get some type of financial satisfaction out of them. But I don't think I would have done that either, because most of us are basically nice. Although I do have many acquaintance friends that would have taken the action that I just described at the drop of a hat. It's an interesting thought. I'll tell you a funny restaurant story that actually did occur to me, if you're still listening. That's a questionable situation. This is actually a funny story.
Okay, get comfortable, everybody. It's time for one of Ron's funny stories.
All right, here's what happened. I'm again at a local restaurant, a very chic, a very nice one, a fairly expensive one. And I'm having dinner with another couple, me and my woman. And my friend is an attorney. I have a lot of attorney friends. Don't fuck with me. I have a lot of attorney friends. And his wife was there as well. So it's the four of us. It's a double couples evening out in the restaurant. We're sitting there, and we're sitting in a booth. And next to the booth, I'm sitting on the end because I like to sit on the end because I'm tall and my legs don't. And my attorney friend is even taller than I am. He's 6'5". When the two of us walk down the street, people run in the other direction. They think it's some type of Japanese monster movie or something. Oh, here they come! Run, run, run! The monsters are coming! We're very tall, and we both don't smile too much. You best get out of the way. criminals run in the other direction. I mean, we are intimidating, I guarantee you. So I'm sitting on the, on the aisle, so I have some leg room. And, you know, there's the aisle where, you know, the waiters and waitresses have the food and all that. And then there's another row of booths on the other side of the aisle. So we order steak from this place because we all are in the mood for steak. Who's in the mood for steak? Raise your hand. Okay. Order the steak, you know, and I go through, medium rare, please, big potato, and we're sitting there and we're talking, and maybe about 10, 15 minutes pass by, and the server comes out, this lady comes out with a big tray with the four dinner plates, and she puts the meal down in front of my attorney friend and in front of his wife, and puts the meal down next to my lady's place, and puts mine down. Just as mine is about to go down, and she's in the aisle holding the plate, there's a lady on the other side of the aisle who apparently has an allergy or a cold or something like that. So she's constantly sneezing. All of a sudden, right? She doesn't sneeze toward where her friends are at her table on the opposite side of the aisle. She turns away from her friends to sneeze into the aisle, where at that very moment, the waitress is holding my plate ready to put it in front of me. The sneeze comes from this other lady on the other side of the aisle, this other customer. She takes the plate and she puts it down in front of me, the waitress. And I had to make a quick decision, and I said, no, excuse me, the lady on the other side of the aisle just sneezed right near the plate that you were holding. I can't take this. And the waitress looks at me like, what, are you crazy? And I look at her. No words are being said here. They're just looks. And my look is, don't mess with me. Take that plate back. It's just been sneezed on. And she takes the plate away. My attorney friend, at that point, begins to tell me stories. He used to work in a kitchen, in a restaurant. And when a customer complained about anything, if the food came back for any reason, be it somebody sneezed on it, the food wasn't hot enough, it wasn't cooked right, whatever, apparently in this kitchen, the short order chefs would do something on the plate. Disgusting. They may spit on it, they may cough on it, they may do something worse to it. They may drop the steak on the floor and pick it up again, that kind of thing. I said, do restaurants really do that? He says they will never admit that they do, but that what goes on in a kitchen sometimes, Ron, you wouldn't believe. I'm not saying they all do it. I'm not saying most do it, but it does happen. I said, oh, my God. Oh, my God. He says, don't worry. They wouldn't do it here. This is a high-class place. They're, you know, they understand what happened. The waitress saw it. It had nothing to do with you. I said, oh, my gosh. I said, why would they do something like that? He says, well, in restaurants, they get pissed a lot. There's a lot of pressure back there and a lot of confusion, and they just, if anybody complains, they get insulted, and that's what they do in some places. He says, well, at least the one that I worked at. I said, wow. That's a story I don't want to hear. He says, yeah. He says, I'll be honest with you, Ron. I never return any food. What? Yeah, he says, if I return it, I don't ask for something in its place because it's possible that they could do something to the food. I just say, I'm not eating. Take my food off the bill, and that's it. I said, wow. That sucks. He says, The only thing that I will return if it's not proper is the fried pickle. I said, what are you talking about?
And that was another funny story from Ron. Wait, that was supposed to be funny? Wow.
If you're joining me for the first time, where the hell you been? I do this every single weekday, no matter what. Well, depends. I don't think I did it on Christmas or New Year's or Thanksgiving. But other than that, I'm usually doing this show. So if you could just take a little time out of your day, it's appreciated. The more listeners I have, the more I financially gain. You don't have to pay me. Other people do. So, you know, but it's based on your listenership. Okay, I've groveled enough, haven't I? If you want to be a guest on the program, you can contact me by going to ronvandamshow@gmail.com, ronvandamshow@gmail.com, and we'll see if this works out or not. If you have any questions or ideas for topics on the show, you can also contact me through ronvandamshow@gmail.com. I don't read the damn thing, but it makes you feel better that you emailed me, I guess. I've said on the show before that when companies say, thank you for calling our company, at the end of your phone call, would you mind taking a short survey? Customer service appreciation is very important to us. And I always take the survey because I'm very opinionated, as you might know. I did that once with Comcast. You're familiar with what Comcast is? You're familiar with that company? They basically own the entire planet now? Them. Yeah, that's who they are. And I was complaining about something. I don't think my service was going right or something like that. And I took the survey at the end and I chewed them out. I said, your service is horrible. You made an offer to me to lower my bill and then you didn't follow through and all this kind of crap. Which is just typical. It's typical. So I actually complained because in the back of my mind, no one ever listens to these complaints. When you take these surveys, they just throw them in the garbage. They shred them up. Even if they print them out, it's amazing. They don't. They just do it to make you feel like you're participating. It makes you feel better. You get it off your chest and you say to yourself, well, they really care how I feel. See, most Americans love taking surveys. They love it because they count now. You know, we're so inundated and it's so important to us for someone to listen to us. They actually asked for my opinion. Can you believe it? They actually cared what I thought. Yes, they're not like any other company. They care about me. They really do want me to be satisfied. Yeah, bullcrap. They throw it in the garbage. They don't care. They just make you feel like that you think they care. So, 3 days later, I get my telephone rings. That's how often people call me. And I pick up the phone. It's Comcast. And I thought, well, what's the problem? And they said, well, you took a survey at the end of a phone call about 3 days ago, and you complained that we had given you two different types of information about lowering your cable bill, and you were very dissatisfied with the way we handled it. And I said, oh, my God. Is this really Comcast? Because I don't believe it. Comcast would never return my call when I answered telephone surveys. Is this a joke? Are you going to tell me that you're going to offer me a free fried pickle? Are you kidding me? I said, no, Mr. Van Dam, we take customer service very seriously, and we understand there was a conflict as to what we told you about price on your cable bill. I said, yeah, that was a problem for me. Said, well, we're calling to extremely apologize to you. We here at Comcast take great pride in our customer service. It's number one to me. J.D. Powers, of course, rates us somewhere on the survey somewhere. And customer service is very important to everybody at Comcast. You've been a loyal customer for at least 10 years, and we really value your opinion. And we want to apologize that you were given conflicting information. I said, okay. And then I was waiting for them to make me some type of a solid offer to lower my cable bill, which is the original reason that I had called them to begin with. What actually happened was, I get a call from Comcast at a point, the original call, and they said, we can lower your cable bill. I said, oh, okay. I said, fine, what do I have to do? They said, well, it's a 2-year contract, and your cable bill will go down by $40 a month. All you have to do is just agree to it, and we can do that. And I said, and it's the same service? You're not lowering my service level or anything like that? No, everything's exactly the same. You'll just be paying $40 less a month for a 2-year contract. I said, well, okay, can you put this in writing? So, no. We can't do that. This is a marketing phone call. Let's see if I said I can't do it. I said, tell you what, I will call Comcast and I'll get the promotion through them, but I don't know that you're actually Comcast. I don't want to give you any information and I don't want to agree to something that I can't see in writing, because I've dealt with Comcast before. They say something and then you agree to it and then it's something else. And I said, I don't want to go through that. I just need it in writing. So, well, we can't really do that. We can't email you out of this department. So then I call Comcast back immediately, and I say, look, I was just given an offer for $40 less on my cable bill per month, but they couldn't email me anything hard copy, so I need to call Comcast just to verify that that is indeed the deal. And the lady at Comcast at that point said, well, we're not offering anything like that. I said, well, then who called me? They said they were from Comcast. We do have a separate department that calls with promotional offers, even if you do have an account with us. So, okay, well, yeah, I'd like to take that. I'd like to do that then, you know, with some type of, written confirmation. He says, well, we, our departments are not connected. We can't. They perform independently. That's when I got upset. That's when I said, well, you're all Comcast, aren't you? But your departments don't talk and they're separate offers? I said, oh, this doesn't make any sense. So she says, well, would you like to speak to a supervisor? I said, yes. And she put me on hold, and I sat there for 10 minutes with nothing. I felt like a fool. I hung up. But before I hung up, I had agreed to a survey. And I took the survey, and then I hung up, and I was livid in the survey. And that's why these people called me back 3 days later. And they profusely apologize. I'm so sorry, Mr. Van Damme. This is not what we're about. Two different departments, and they couldn't hook it up, and they couldn't give you the promotion when they originally. It's awful, and we strive. We're going to correct that immediately. Said thank you, and then I expected them to say, and we will offer you that $40 promotion at this time, Mr. Van. But they didn't say that. They just profusely apologized, and I said, and they said, and we apologize. I said, well, okay, thanks for the apology, but what about the $40 promotion problem that I was complaining about to begin with? Oh, they're separate departments. We can't do anything about that. What? What? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Actually, it wasn't a very funny story, was it?
That was another funny story from Ron. Wait, that was supposed to be funny? Wow.
Do you ever feel like you just want to open up a suitcase, just pack some general, generic belongings like underpants and socks, piece of paper and a pencil, a banana, and just go away? Just get away from all of this. No cell phones, no computers, nothing. I got to get away.
Times are getting harder. Only one to run a roll.
I did that once. I did pack my suitcase, and I found a little cabin in the mountains. I think I've told you this story. I've probably told you everything. Once I tell you the fried pickle story, that's it. Then I've told you everything. So I pack the bags, and I go up there. It's a nice little cabin. It's in the woods. It's beautiful. I can see the mountains in the background. There are a couple of restaurants down at the bottom of the hill where I can have a nice meal. There's a little television set. It only gets the network, so I can only watch the stupid network shows. And I don't even watch television. I turn my cell phone off. Oh, it's charged in case there's an emergency, but I don't use it. And I spend most of my time sitting on a rocking chair on the deck outside of this little cabin. I got so bored I went home.
Ron Van Dam Show is intended for mature audiences.
Oh, so that's what ironic means.
Yes, honey. Yes, it does.
Part of what I do on this program is not only talk about the ridiculous experiences that we all go through in our lives and how everybody is pretty much out to get us on purpose. Over the years doing this show for 25 plus centuries, I've had the opportunity to speak to many experts in the medical field. I've learned so much. It's been pretty cool. I referred to my friend, my lawyer friend, who is 6'5", I am 6'3", if I stand up real straight. We're menacing, but we're tall. And tall people are more prone to back problems. It's difficult for them to stand up straight because there's a lot of stand up straight to get up there. I can't even touch my toes. I really never could because there's a long way down there for me. It's like a road trip to get down to my feet. So I tend to have a little curvature of the spine, and most tall people do. Also, psychologically, you may not want to feel that tall, so you might bend forward a little bit in order to try to be more general. But people can get back problems even if they're short, sometimes chronic, sometimes for all of their life. And back surgeries are numerous and questionable. We're going to talk about scoliosis today, which is the general back problem thing. And we're going to speak to an expert from the Mayo Clinic. Of course, the Mayo Clinic, famous for inventing mayonnaise. And then they do medical stuff on the side. I'm only kidding. It's just mayonnaise. Of course, the Mayo Clinic, well-known throughout the world, people flying all throughout the world to go to the various clinics. because they are so knowledgeable. So let's speak to an expert about back problems.
Hey, good morning.
How are you today?
I'm all right. How are you, Ron?
Fantastic. Dr. Mark Pickelman joins us now. He is an assistant professor of neurosurgery and is a neurosurgery residency program director at the Mayo Clinic in Florida. He's been doing it for a long time. We're talking about scoliosis today. What is scoliosis?
Quite simply, scoliosis is just a curvature of the spine. Mm-hmm. I think most folks recognize scoliosis as happening in adolescence, primarily discovered during school physicals and things like that. Mm-hmm. But it can actually happen in adults that didn't have a prior history of scoliosis, and is actually a much more common form of scoliosis that happens later in adult life.
Yeah. What happens later in adult life? Do the bones get a little bit more brittle? How does that curvature take place when you get older?
Sure. With folks that have not had a history of scoliosis before, mm-hmm. depending on how the spine wears out, mm-hmm. we all develop arthritis over time. Mm-hmm. If that arthritis develops in a way that's asymmetric, such as a disc or a facet joint on one side of the spine wearing out a little bit faster than the other side, that can start creating a little bit of a curvature that then leads to more curvature over time. As other levels kind of do the same thing in a compensatory type of fashion.
Yeah. So when people get older and they say, I'm shrinking, I've actually not as high as I was before, that might be what they're talking about.
Absolutely. As we all age, we become a little bit shorter as our disc space height in the front part of our spine gets shorter. Okay. But that can also be a result of scoliosis, which can lead to shortening of the spine as well. So both contribute to that.
Okay. Now, without paying you a fee for a medical visit, I'll tell you that I am 6'3", and I was when I was 14 years old. And my mother told me every day of my life, stand up straight, stand up straight, stand up straight. Is that diagnosable as scoliosis in that sense?
Not by itself. It's really a normal part of aging. We all like to kind of, as time goes on, tend to lean forward a bit. And some of that is related to some wear and tear changes involving the discs that, in our spine. And as you know, we have 30 some segments, and each of those contributes just a little bit to that leaning forward, but isn't by itself diagnosable as scoliosis.
Now we're talking about actual scoliosis, and that, how do we know we have that? And that, would that be an extreme situation?
Well, scoliosis is actually pretty common. It gets more common as we age, obviously, but anywhere from 2 to 25% of the population will have some degree of scoliosis. And the definition is simply 10 degrees of curvature in the spine, either in the thoracic or more commonly in the lower lumbar spine. So most patients will present with symptoms of back pain, worsened back pain, or symptoms in the legs, like sciatica or something similar, and get an X-ray or an MRI that shows that they have some curvature in their spine.
Which is different than arthritis, is what you're saying.
Well, it's a form of arthritis.
It is
just
a form.
It kind of depends on how arthritis wants to set itself up in your spine. And some folks don't have scoliosis but have arthritis and symptoms. Other people do have scoliosis as a result of that arthritis and symptoms.
Now, I also see they were talking about spinal tumor, which is, would that be a cause of scoliosis?
It can be, depending on, that would be a much more rare cause of scoliosis, but sometimes, depending on how tumors present in the spine, they can result in some form of scoliosis. Yeah. That's certainly possible.
Now, tumors don't necessarily have to be something that protrude the skin externally. You may have a tumor, but it doesn't show. Is that accurate?
Yeah. oftentimes spine tumors present incidentally, so patients will have some other form of cancer that they're aware of, and their oncologist will order scans to look at the rest of the body to see if there are other sites where they may have cancer, and oftentimes the spine, particularly in certain cancers, is a common site to have a metastasis develop, but not necessarily be obvious externally.
Okay. All right, so the next question is, what would we do about it, whether it be mild or extreme? I assume there's treatment.
It really depends on the symptoms. Incidentally discovered scoliosis doesn't necessarily need to be treated, and oftentimes we just recommend follow-up imaging over time to make sure it's not progressing. In patients that have severe symptoms, such as severe low back pain or have pain in their legs, sciatic type of symptoms, then the typical treatment algorithm would be non-operative to begin with, such as physical therapy or injections or massage or some other non-operative modality. And only if those fail does surgery potentially become an option.
Okay. Because I know a lot of people that have back pain, that's fairly common. And as a result of, I mean, for all different reasons, and when you have back pain, you favor the pain by not standing up straight anymore. Would we call that scoliosis as well, or would that be a result of just trying to limit pain from some other cause?
Sure, yeah. That's not necessarily scoliosis, but as you know, the vast majority of people have some episodes of back pain intermittently that cause them to even miss work. They can be so severe, and those are typically self-limited, and patients or people will try to hold themselves in a posture that relieves some of that pain until that pain eases. But the vast majority of that pain can be treated non-operatively with, like I said, physical therapy or injections or temporary course of pain medicines or something like that.
All right. So my regular medical doctor would be able to discern if I have some of those symptoms, if I need a specialist or how to treat it. Is that well defined in the general medical world?
Yeah. And I think most primary care physicians are very in tune with back pain because it's so common. And when there are quote unquote red flags such as leg pain, urinary symptoms, troubles controlling bowel, bladder, that kind of thing, they are easily referred on to the next level of specialty care.
Okay. I mean, I sometimes have trouble figuring if I have a problem or whether I need to get a new mattress. Seriously, I mean, or a new pillow. I guess that can be a cause of a lot of concern, and the way that you walk during the day as well.
Sure. Yep. Occupational hazards such as standing for long periods of time, looking at your computer, texting probably contributes to some of that. A lot of relieving that pain you're talking about is a bit trial and error, to be honest. Some people favor one type of bed versus another, and some firmer pillows and not as firm pillows. There's no way of predicting in any individual person what's going to be their cure, so it kind of becomes a trial and error type of approach.
Tell me about the Mayo Clinic just for a second. We've had conversations with the Mayo Clinic many times before. What sets that apart? It's kind of like the exalted venue. How did this begin?
Well, I think what sets the Mayo Clinic apart a little bit is its focus on multidisciplinary care. So at all three of the main campuses in Rochester, Arizona, and here in Florida, we have a spine center that intakes patients with all types of different spine problems. We have physiatrists, pain medicine specialists, and neurosurgeons that all evaluate those patients and decide what's the best course of treatment for any individual person. And I think that multidisciplinary care and having all those specialties together in one place really kind of sets the Mayo Clinic apart in that respect.
How do I get more information?
Yep. The easiest way is to go to mayoclinic.org. There's information about all of Mayo's programs, and in particular, there's information about scoliosis at all three of our sites. So I'd encourage patients to get on the internet or and do a little reading and exploration.
Great. Dr. Pickleman, thank you so much for your time today.
That was great to be with you, Ron.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, too.
Well, there you have it, my little friends. That's the show for today. This has been an experience that I'll never forget for at least 10, 15 minutes. Then I won't even remember that I did this. It's funny, when I do these shows, I tape these things early in the morning every weekday, and people run into me later in the day and say, Ron, how was the show today? And I go, that was good, it's good. Really, what'd you talk about? I know it was good. I talked about, wow, it escapes me. It was a few hours ago. Let's see. Okay, I talked about, I know I talked about something. Join me again tomorrow, will you please? Good. Thank you. I wish you peace.